Hey everyone, Chris from After Hours Podcast here. I got another podcast coming up for you here real quick. I just wanted to run through a few things. I won't keep you too long. We'll get at it. First of all, man, I got to really thank everyone out there for listening to the podcast. And you guys really pushed it up towards the top there. We're running, one, two, three, I think top five almost every week now. So, man, I can't thank you enough. I hope you guys are still really enjoying it. And if there's anything you want to hear or whatever, please shoot me an email at chris@flighttest.com. The other thing, too, keep sending in your crash stories, man. We love to hear about them, read them, talk about them on the show. It's just fun. And been thinking, you guys let me know. If we get a really funny crash story or something really bizarre or whatever, I've even been thinking about maybe calling you up on the phone, doing a little interview with you for the podcast and talk about the crash and, you know, what happened and what your thoughts were and everything. So just something, you know, we might do down the road if you guys are interested in doing. So keep sending them in. Hey, also, we got, in case you haven't heard, we got a new Instagram page, FT After Hours, which is mostly kind of run by Wayne Griffith. 99% of all the pictures on there that you see are all done by him. The guy's phenomenal behind the lens. So check that out. It's got some really cool stuff up there. We're getting a lot of followers here every week. So it's growing, and we've been enjoying doing that. We try to get, you know, three or four pictures out there for you every week. Hit me up on Twitter if you have any questions at FT After Hours. Last but not least, too, I don't know if we actually even have any yet, but you still have the option to leave us a voicemail. If you go on the website, click on the podcast, click on one of the After Hours podcast, down in there somewhere around the middle should be a link for SpeakPipe, and you can click on there and leave us a voicemail, and we can play it on the air. We got a couple other things I think in the works to test. Generally, whatever you guys see being reviewed on the regular Flight Test YouTube channel, we usually get everything after the guys are done with it. Now, Bixler said, you know, numerous times they get sometimes backed up and busy and stuff sits here for a little while, and he's like, just take it out, you know, do what you need to do. But I don't know what the deal is lately. I got a little bit of David Vindenstahl in me here, and I've been augering a lot of stuff in the ground. So, you know, I told Josh that when you guys are done and got your review in and everything, I said, we'll take it and put it through the ringer. Cause, we try to go a little bit more in depth, and we actually just pass the transmitter around to 3, 4, or 5 guys and get everybody's feedback on it. And it's, you know, we try to go from maybe advanced intermediate to intermediate, you know, all the way down to, it, you know, if a beginner can fly it. So also, I think I've done it a couple times, but maybe we'll try it again on the next review. I'd like to get some questions on whatever we're reviewing. I'll throw it out there on Twitter. Maybe I'll throw it on the Flight Test Facebook on what we're reviewing and when we're going to record. And you guys can maybe send in some questions on it, and we'll try to answer them while we're recording the podcast. And maybe that'll help you guys out, or even make a decision on whether, you know, you're looking into buying it or not. So, other than that, let's see. Well, this podcast coming up, we're doing a review on the new Park Zone Sukhoi, and man, we had a lot of fun with that airplane, and we did a lot of flying with it and a lot of passing around the transmitter. So, well, you know what? Let's heck with it. Let's just get it going and tell me what you guys think about it. All right, sit back, relax. Here we go. Hey everybody, welcome back. Another episode of FT After Hours coming at you here. We got another full crew here in studio. Got Wayne Griffith.
Hey guys.
Mike Coolins.
Hello.
And Pat Hummer's back in with us.
Hello.
So we got a lot to talk about this week. We are going to do Park Zone Sukhoi review. We might talk a little bit about the HK goggles that they have out, because we did a little testing with those. And we got lots of crash stories and some emails we're going to go through. So I'll tell you what, let's kind of do, we'll jump right into it and we'll get this thing rolling here. First thing I want to talk about real quick, I've got a couple emails from this gentleman, Mohit Diwan, and he's actually from Australia. And any of you guys, if you want to answer this, but what he asks is, since he's, you know, obviously a non-resident, he finds the U.S. very curious. He doesn't know a whole lot about Ohio because it's really not internationally known as like California or New York or Texas or Florida or anything. So what he was thinking was, you know, explaining about Ohio, what it's about, you know, because it is home to flight test, and discussing why maybe there's so much aviation related activity in Ohio. Now, as far as the flight test thing, really, it's just kind of where it started because of Chad and right. and Josh Bixler. I mean, we all live here.
This is where we live.
So, I mean, really, that's kind of how that got started. But as far as the aviation in Ohio, I mean, yeah, we were kind of known because of the Wright brothers kind of started things here. And, you know, we do have the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and the big museum down in Dayton. But I don't know if I'd really say that we're, you know, a giant state, you know, for aviation or, you know, anything like that. What do you think, Pat? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we have our share of aviation here in Ohio. I mean, like you mentioned, the Wright brothers. And, you know, Ohio is the birthplace of John Glenn, first man to orbit the Earth. You know, we were talking a little bit about just right north of here, about 10 minutes in Akron, Ohio, they made some of the Corsairs
right.
during World War II.
Yeah.
And, also, you know, I mentioned they'd, manufactured two of the four rigid airships that were ever built. One being made down in New Jersey, two in Akron, and one was a World War I reparation out of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing about the airships that were made out of Akron here is, the two airships that were made out of Akron both had a detachment of Sparrow aircraft, little observation aircraft.
Oh, really?
Biplanes. And if you ever get a chance to look on online, you could probably find old videos of these airplanes. They would fly right up underneath the blimp or uh-huh. the rigid airship. They would drop a hook out
no
of the
way.
Bottom of the bottom
really?
Of the airship. And the Sparrow aircraft had a little trapeze apparatus on
uh-huh.
the top wing. It would fly right into that hook, and then they'd wind it right up into the,
no.
of the airship.
How did I not know this?
Yeah,
that's
really.
Crazy. That's
so
unbelievable.
It's yeah, and those two rigid airships, I believe they crashed. There were four of them. The first one, I think, was the USS Los Angeles, which I believe was one of the World War I war reparations from Germany.
Uh-huh.
And then in New Jersey, I believe they made, I'd have to look, but I think they made the Shenandoah, and they made the USS Akron and the USS Macon right here in Akron, I believe.
Huh.
Another interesting fact about Ohio aviation relating to the rigid airships is about an hour south of here in Caldwell is the crash of the USS Shenandoah.
That's right, yep.
So, yeah.
And it's the only location in the United States where there has been a USS something
uh-huh.
ship. You know, everyone thinks of ships as being USS, you know, Lexington
right.
or Ronald Reagan. Back then it was airships, so
uh-huh.
it's the only place in the United States where there's a USS ship crash inland.
Oh, I see.
So and that broke apart in two pieces in bad weather.
Yeah.
And so there are
right.
a couple little interesting facts
right.
about Ohio aviation.
Yeah. But in general, since you know, obviously you have the aviation background amongst us, but really most of all the airplanes are actually built in Kansas, correct?
Well, a lot of them are built in Kansas. You have a lot of, you know, Kansas has got a pretty dominant manufacturing presence there right in Wichita with Cessna. All of course, you know, a lot of the companies now, Cessna, Beechcraft, the companies that were originally born and bred in Wichita
mm-hmm.
branched out. You know, they're making some airplanes or parts of airplanes in other countries and other locations. But, you know, Boeing is in Wichita. Cessna, that's where a lot of the propeller-driven aircraft are made. That's
mm-hmm.
where all of the Citation business jet series are made. Bombardier is in Wichita. Used to be just Learjet.
Yeah. Now, originally they were out of Montreal, though, right?
Bombardier is a Canada transportation conglomerate. You know, they've got the rail cars and and aircraft,
snowmobiles,
cats, things like that, watercraft, their business aircraft were the Challengers, the Bombardier Challengers, which were made up in Montreal.
Yep.
And when Bombardier purchased Gates Learjet quite a few years ago.
Oh, I see.
They moved a lot of manufacturing, and they put a lot of manufacturing down there in Wichita, which was historically Learjet, Gates Learjet. So...
That's funny because, this was years and years ago when I worked for Delta. When we first got the RJs, when they first come out, I actually had, and I don't know where I have it, but I actually had a photo of one of the RJs sitting out on the line. They had their full snowmobile line in front of it. So it was cool. It was this big jet with all the snowmobiles lined up in front of it. I thought that was kind of interesting. So anything else on that one? We'll move along.
Well, I think Ohio will take off in aviation history, not with Flight Fest 2014.
So, good point. Good point. Yeah. Yeah, that could turn out to be one of the largest RCE flying events coming up here soon, I think. All right. Well, here's another one. This guy, again, he sends me quite a few emails, and I read this one and had to laugh about it, but we're going to talk about it anyway. It's AJ Gall, and one of the first things he sent me here, he says, Chris, send FT After Hours crew. He says, I'm also a motocross rider as well and a model airplane flyer and had some questions for you. One, which takes longer, getting ready to go to the track or getting ready to fly for the day? For me, that's it's about the same, whether you got to charge batteries, pack the planes in the car, drive to the flying field, or you pack your motocross gear up, load the bikes. Really, there's no difference there. Second question was, which is more of a thrill, a good jump on a dirt bike or catching a thermal with the radiant? Now, I've done many things in my life. I personally have not found anything as more of a thrill and exciting and exhilarating as racing a dirt bike or jumping. You know, to me, that's the ultimate high. But again, you know, you're sometimes risking your life and your limb to do it. And I've had bad consequences with that. But, you know, it's a whole different perspective. Wayne, you can attest to this. You know, when we are out flying thermals and we do catch a boomer, we're like two little kids in a candy store. We're hooting and hollering. And, I mean, people probably look at us like we're complete idiots.
It's more interactive with other people as opposed to jumping by yourself or getting that thrill. Like, I like bow hunting a lot. So if a big buck comes by, it's hard to explain it. That it's a more...
Right.
Individual experience there.
Yeah.
But with flying, you can share the experience a lot of times with more people, it seems.
Now, with motocross, generally you're
a spectator.
Well, you're on the track with a lot of other people, too. So you do share that experience, whether you pass somebody or you come off of a jump together and you look over at each other.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it's very, very exhilarating. So I would say that tops the flying. But again, it's kind of like apples to oranges on that one. Now, this one, I'm kind of surprised he even asked this question, but he says, which is worse, crashing a dirt bike or crashing or losing an airplane? definitely crashing a dirt bike is way, way worse than crashing or losing a plane.
I mean, because you may have broken an arm or something.
Exactly. There's been many days I've spent in the hospital saying I would never get on a dirt bike again and you know, lots of recovery time, but... So, you know, that was that. But I appreciate the question. That was kind of interesting because I'm finding out there are quite a few guys that are, you know, riding or in the dirt bikes or riding dirt bikes that also are in the model aviation.
Yeah, I just sold my Enduro dirt bike. That's Thursday. It's kind of hard to do.
The cool thing was, it says, you guys actually convinced me to buy a Radian this summer. I live in Missouri and there are lots of trees here. And my Radian has been stuck in one of them since Flight Fest. But I like my Ultra Micro Radian to death. I recently bought a UMX Corsair and love it. This morning I flew it and it was attacked by a red-tailed hawk. I guess hawks are the original warbird.
Yes.
So that was a really good email from AJ. Let's see. We've got a crash story here. This one is from Cameron West. Now, let me scroll through it. This one's pretty good. We've been in the hobby for about a year and a half. We started out with multi-rotors for the past 9 months, and we've been getting really into fixed wings. I have plenty of crash stories, but this one is worth writing about. My dad and I often fly Saturday mornings in a field behind a church in California. There are literally two things in the area: miles and miles of strawberry and lettuce fields, and then a four-foot-high broken-down wooden farm fence about 20 yards from where we stand that runs the length of the field and has a couple of 15-foot-long missing sections that we have to come over when we come in and land.
An airplane magnet.
Exactly. So we were both flying our FT Dusters, and we were cranking around for a while. My dad's timer starts going off, and he comes in for the approach. While I'm still circling above, I could see through my peripheral vision that he's coming in for a land, and everything looks good. About a quarter of a second after his plane goes out of my vision, I hear one of the densest thuds I've heard in a while. He had flown square into the top of half of an inch of the last fence post before one of the 15-foot breaks in the fence, and the plane was all tore up. I was so distracted by what just happened, I almost buried mine into the ground at the same instant. I recovered right before I crashed and took it back up and circled around with my dad, while my dad was collecting the pieces of his plane and cleared out the landing space. Then it was my turn. I also had a real nice glide slope, was coming in nice and slowly for what looked, all accounts, making a nice soft touchdown. When I hit the exact same post in exactly the same spot, my dad and I looked at each other in amazement because we could not believe that both of us would hit the same 4-foot-high, 4-inch-wide fence post within a couple of minutes. My mom was in the background yelling, "How did that happen?" And my dad and I both said that we had no idea. Luckily, the only real damage to my plane was just a broken prop, which we fixed and put it back up that morning. That's pretty crazy. And, you know, that happens all the time. You know, we out at Jackson, and I know Pat can attest to this, we have about
there you go, Pat, under the bus.
We have, what, maybe four light posts out there, you know, in the middle of the field, and Pat literally has his name on all four of them.
Yeah. In fact, when we were out there last week, I noticed they removed one.
Yeah, I think you hit it so many times, it finally fell over.
I thought maybe you took it out when I wasn't out there the instance.
But, you know, that's the way it is. It could be one thing out in the middle of the field, and, you know, and when you're trying not to hit it, you will hit it. It's just like when you try to do combat. You know, you could go out there and just cruise around and run into somebody, but when you're actually trying to do it, it's actually physically harder, you know, than it really is. All right, AJ Gall's got another question for us here. This kind of backs up his the other one with the hawk. Recently, my Corsair was attacked by a hawk. I was wondering, since you guys have been flying for quite a while, what kind of run-ins with nature have you had? I, for one, have had run-ins with hawks, a flock of marlins, and been chased by some sparrows. Now, actually, Wayne, we've kind of had just the opposite here. Usually out thermaling, the buzzards come out with us. I've actually thermaled with a couple hawks before that had no problems. And last year, we had, was it one or two osprey that actually came out with the radiant and cruised around for a while.
They're getting more populated in this area. I see them down fishing at Tappan quite a bit, and they dive into the water. It's pretty impressive bird, for sure.
But it's funny because, like you said, they're not attacking.
No.
Actually, the one time we were flying out Jackson, I seen the osprey, and I told Chris, I told him, get your radiant back up there. So he got it up there. And I seen this thing turn around and come back and just get into a pattern with Chris's radiant.
Right.
And I did get a picture of it as it came in. But it's the same way with the hawks. It's like they're not attacking. They just kind of come right in there and just start soaring with us.
Right. And I was a little nervous because when he turned around, I was like, this could be deadly, you know. But I was shocked. He came right back and just hung out and cruised around with us.
Then he went on his way.
Yeah.
And then he just went, I'm done. And just moved on.
But it's crazy because, you know, you get on YouTube, the amount of videos that those guys have of hawks chasing planes and, you know, and attacking planes.
There's quite a few videos.
Yeah.
I wonder if those, though, might have, like, nests around or something where we're out flying in a way open field and they're just soaring. So I wonder if it's kind of different. You know, one's maybe protecting an area where they would be a little bit more aggressive. Because, you know, it's the same thing as when a hawk comes in, and or even a crow, and you see the little birds get all fired up and start attacking.
Right, right.
I'm just kind of wondering if it's just location.
Well, we've turned the tables on nature a couple of times and attacked the groundhogs.
Oh, yeah, that's the old story. We ought to, you know, maybe we got some new listeners out there. We'll recap that story real quick. We were flying out at actually at the park across from Jackson High School where we fly, and we were flying our Park Zone P-51 Mustangs. And it just happened to be this groundhog came out of its hole and was wandering around. And so Pat got a little close to him a little bit. And, you know, he stood up and was looking around. He wasn't sure what was going on. So now just, you know, nobody gets upset. No groundhogs were hurt during this incident or anything like that. But what was funny was we got the idea Pat would come from one direction and buzz him. And then I would come around to the other direction and buzz him. And this poor thing, he didn't know what to do. He just hunkered down on the ground. He didn't know go left, right. He's looking around. He didn't know what to do. And it was just rather comical.
He was getting strafed in between.
Yeah, you know, we were just one direction. Then we'd switch around the other direction. And this poor guy, he just didn't know what to do.
That's
and it
funny.
Was pretty
you
funny.
Know, you can always give a plug and say that you know, that this airplane has been tested on animals.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think he was having fun too, though.
Yeah,
he down inside, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was a story to go back and tell all his buddies. You'll never believe what just happened to me. You know, I could just hear him in the hole. So that was pretty funny. All right. Hey, we got another crash story here. And this is a gentleman from Belgium, and I'm going to butcher his name. Giles Durchin. I'm going to take a stab at that. He sent in, now this is kind of funny, I read through this a little bit ago, and this is something I never really think about when I'm kind of teaching people how to fly, or you know, when you pass over the controller. I'm going to see if I can paraphrase it. I was talking to some friends and we were wondering what to do, so I had an idea to take my plane out and let them fly it for a few minutes. I have to say none of them had any experience. I went to my place and I took my plane out. It was an Axon RC Alpha 139, which that's kind of like an Easy Star. So you have an idea what he had. I chucked it in the air and I flew it a few mistakes high and I showed him what the control sticks did and then I handed it over to him. He flew for 30 seconds, which, you know, that's kind of the norm, you know, when you hand the transmitter over. I handed it over. Let's see. I flew for about 30 seconds, and then suddenly he pushes a transmitter into my hands. I wasn't really paying attention, so I looked at the plane just when it flew straight into the ground. The nose exploded. The tail broke off. The battery was crushed, so I won't be using that one again. Finally, the propeller flew off the motor, and it just disappeared. The boy was so shocked, he kept apologizing. He was actually almost crying. What actually happened was that I explained the controls wrong. For those of us who have flying experience, it's normal that we want to go up, we pull back on the control stick. But for those who have no experience at all, when I explained the controls, I didn't pay attention that let him know when he wanted to go up to actually pull the stick back. So what he did was he pushed the stick forward. And again, that's just something, you know, with no experience or anything, that could be.
That's typical with most video games, too. Like when you're doing that third person, you go up. A lot of people like it that way for video gaming.
Right.
It throws my mind for a loop. I always have to configure the controllers more like flight.
Right. Let's see. I think I got one more in here.
Yeah, it's those things we take for granted that we just don't pay attention.
Sure.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. All right, one more here. This is from Joe Bellin. Hey, Chris, I'm an avid listener. Anyway, I have a Hobby Zone Super Cub and was flying the Cub at an event Sunday. The first battery did some circuits around the field. Second battery added some loops, started doing a little inverted flight. I'm not a great pilot, so this challenge is exciting for me, which, Mike, you can attest to that since you just started doing a little bit of inverted with the Sukhoi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. About the fourth time, I was a little too low. And again, I've done this so many times. I was a little too low, panicked as the plane lost elevation. Instead of pushing up on the or pushing down on the stick, I pulled up and nosedived right into the ground. Now I have major repair to do. Attached is the picture of the result. And I was looking at it. It's pretty bad. Now, throw myself under the bus for a little while. When I first got the T-28 Trojan, Pat, and you know, Pat was destroying me in the flying department there for a while. So I was really trying to practice my. Pat's, you know, dragging the tail on the P-51 through the grass, inverted, you know, like it's nothing. So I was out practicing my inverted skills with a T-28. Now, this not only happened once, did I destroy one, but it happened twice and I destroyed two. But the same thing, I was about 3 feet off the ground, flying inverted. You know, you got the little down pressure on the stick, and it was gusty that day, and a little gust hit it. Well, what's your first reaction? The pull back on the stick. Yep. So I've augured quite a few planes in that way, and that's really easy to do. So
at Flight Fest, I was flying my baby blender inverted, and I knew I was too low to like roll out or do anything. And I ended up, the only thing I could think to do is land it upside down and broke the top wing off. I tried to be as gentle as possible. I repaired it since then, but it's like I couldn't get enough elevation. It had too much lift in the opposite direction with the baby blender, and I had a heavier battery, and so it's nose heavy. And like, because I've flown that inverted numerous times and never had that kind of difficulty. I couldn't bring it up, but I think it was with the extra nose weight, mate, possibly.
Yeah.
That I just had
There are some planes that, you know, you'll find, you'll roll them inverted, and you slowly, like, at first everything seems fine, but then it just slowly starts, you know, losing altitude, and you see yourself just pushing down. Nothing. Pretty soon, then you're fired, you know, by that time, it's too late. Yeah. And it just, yeah.
Yep. That's exactly what happened.
That happens. Hey, I got one more real quick story. This one is from Danny Bear, and I think he might be local here. And this is kind of a typical crash story that happens, like if you're out of club or anything, but he was flying a Super Cub when a wing doing a vertical roll went right through his tail. The whole plane was destroyed, went into a dive, no control. He had no climb, no roll, no nothing, and it crashed in a lot of pieces. The tail was in shreds, and after he got it all gathered up, he said he swung by Aerotech, which is our local hobby shop here, so I'm assuming he's local. But luckily, he said by the next day, he had it out flying. So that I could definitely see that happen. Them wings, man, they're tough as nails and takes serious. I mean, a lot of guys fly them just for combat, you know, and so that would be tough to take. Well, guys, I think that's it for some of the email and the crash stories, but we love hearing the crash stories. We do a lot of it, so keep sending them in. I love to hear about them. Okay, now let's get into the meat and potatoes of what we're here to talk about, and that is the new Park Zone Sukhoi 3D aerobatic airplane, which we all spent quite a bit of time flying, some of us crashing, myself included, which we'll get into. So let's get into that. First of all, we'll run down some of the specs with it. We'll talk about a little bit, and then we'll get into flying it. First thing, it does have the new AR636 DSMX receiver with the safe technology built in. And again, this is their new receiver that they just come out with that is fully programmable. You can buy the small little, I think it's either $9 or $14, I can't remember which, programmer that plugs right in the receiver, and then you can plug it into your iPad, your iPhone, or your Android phone, or actually I think you can get the cord for the laptop computer also. And what that does is they have an app, and you can go in and change any settings, anything you want, the gains, the controls, everything imaginable through the receiver. So you can go online, you can download the manual, you can go through it, you know, check it out, but I think that's phenomenal. Just for the fact, now this plane comes pre-programmed, and after flying it, I think that the settings they have in it are really good. So you may not have to monkey with it much. But for anybody just buying an AR-636 and you put it in a plane, you know, that's going to be completely different, you want to set it up and change some things, and so I think that's a phenomenal idea what they got going there. It does come with a 10 size 1250 kV brushless outmotor, eFlight 40 amp ESC. It has some newer eFlight 13-gram digital micro servos in it, which are normally they're quite a bit bigger than the standard Park Zone servos, so I applaud them on that. It has a lightweight hollow wing Z-foam construction. It also has leading-edge vortex generators, not only on the top, but also on the bottom. It's got the high green trim scheme, which I really like the trim scheme on this airplane. Yeah. It's really pretty in the air. Wayne's got quite a few shots on it. I think you actually posted some on the FT After Hours Instagram. So if you haven't seen it or whatever, check out our Instagram. There's quite a few pictures of it on there. Does have a two-piece plug-in wing, double beveled hinges for large control surfaces, durable landing gear, large wheels, easy access hatch. Now, I just want to run through a few features from this. Now, it was designed by Mike McConville. He's a world-class champion pilot and also aircraft designer. And I also had the Park Zone Extra. I had that for quite a few years, and that was also one of his designs. And that was kind of my 3D plane I was flying for quite a while. Now, has the safe technology built into this airplane? So it's aware of its attitude relative to the ground. Its attitude awareness has been used to create four flight modes that lets experienced RC pilots explore aggressive aerobatics with more confidence and less risk. In stagility mode, the airplane can perform any aerobatic or 3D maneuver, but will return to upright flight if both sticks are released. The AS3X 3D mode provides a marvelous balance of crisp response and rock-solid stability when practicing low-speed 3D maneuvers like hovers or Harriers. Now, it also has AS3X precision mode, which is great for flying aerobatics at high speeds because it smooths out the effects of the turbulence so the aircraft tracks like it's on rails. And always, in case of emergency, the panic recovery mode is always there. Any mode you're in, the button will work and it'll self-right anytime. So, that's basically the down low on the airplane. We'll talk a little bit more in detail as we each one of us will, you know, kind of talk about flying it. But let's start off, excuse me, I got the plane and I actually took it out by myself one morning, and I was really excited about this plane, as I think everybody was to fly it. And got out to the field. It was pretty windy, like 10 to 12 miles an hour, and I actually burned through, I think, 5 batteries. Now, here's the funny thing. Out of those 5 batteries, at the time, I didn't like the airplane, if you can believe that or not.
I remember you telling me that. Even.
And it was probably me, because I really, you know, Wayne and I have kind of, I used to fly quite a bit of 3D, and I kind of got out of that for a while. You know, we had been doing DLGs and thermal gliding and, you know, flying the Beavers, which are definitely not aerobatic. So I think just initially getting into it, I was out of my element for a little while, and plus the wind added in, and I just really didn't like it. Now, the funny thing was, I was trying that stagility mode, and we kind of come to find out that if you just want to kind of cruise around with that airplane, that is definitely not the mode that you want to use, because the instant those sticks, you know, and you're not using them, that plane, no matter what you're doing, I don't care if you're in a turn or whatever, that thing just tries to self-right.
Yeah.
So I was having trouble with that. I just wasn't feeling the 3D mode. The plane just kind of felt funny. I really just didn't like it.
That so, was my least favorite mode, was that stagility
right.
mode.
Unless but,
you're really hammering with
yes.
sticks, you said.
So, fast forward to the next day, I called Wayne. I said, come on, Wayne, you've got to come out and fly this. So, I flew a battery or so through it, and I was explaining the problems I was having. So, Wayne, I think at the time, you really didn't even want to fly it, did you?
No, I figured if you're crashing this thing, there ain't no way I want to touch that thing.
Yeah, so I'm like, I don't care, you're going to fly this thing. We're going to put a battery in, we're going to go up 4 mistakes high, and you're going to bang the sticks around. So, I had the dual rates on them, and we finally got off the ground, and you got cruising around a little bit. Now, here's the funny thing is I'm telling him all the bad things about this plane, which probably shouldn't have done, and he didn't want to fly it. But the funny thing is, once he did get up, of course, I had him on low rates, and he's cruising around. I seen a smile come across his face. And you know, when Wayne is smiling, he's having a good time. Yeah. So I go, you kind of like this. He's like, yeah, I do. It's real precise. It flies really good. And so, I got a battery through it, and I said, okay, next time you're going to go up, we're going to put you on full 3D, we're going to try this stagility thing and let you bang the sticks around. So he did. We got you up, Wayne. Yep. And talk about that a little bit, what your thoughts were getting up there and for really your first time of really banging right. around the sticks of a 3D airplane.
Yeah, I've never flown a 3D airplane before. Everything I've flown is either gliders, high wing, larger, slower planes. Nothing. Dynamic S is about the only thing I've flown that was fast. We got up there, and like I said, I have no experience at it, so I am a little nervous at flying this thing. But what I did find out real quick with this thing is it goes where you tell it to go, no matter what. And that was probably the easiest thing for me, is the fact that I point it in this direction, sure. I go this direction, sure. You told me to do some rolls, some loops, boom, it would do it. And it was very easy. And that's why I like the precision mode better than the stagility, because the stagility, if my brain stalled for just a second and I'm trying to think through something, it auto-corrected, and I hated that. That was, you know, it's good. I understand what they're doing.
Right.
But I didn't like that part. I liked the fact that with precision, I felt more control. It wasn't auto-correcting every time I wanted it to do something, which I liked. But once you got, you know, we threw the high rates on it and started playing around, started banging the sticks and stuff, hey, it was great because then I could try it and I, you know, it would auto-correct if I messed up. So that was a lot of fun.
Right. And here's what brought me to it after watching you fly it. Because yes. I was, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not like I just, I obviously had the problems with the plane. I wasn't really feeling it, but I didn't want to give up on this thing because it did fly good. Yeah. So after watching you fly though in Stagility and watching some of the stuff you were doing for the first time, you know, you were trying inverted. I think you tried knife edge. Mm-hmm. You were trying Harrier. You know, the basic maneuvers, you were actually physically doing them for your first time, which right. kind of blew me out of the water. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got the concept on Stagility mode to where if you want to go out and just try them 3D maneuvers and you're really, you know, using the sticks, it really works fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then when you do let go of the sticks, it does self-right. So I can definitely see for somebody going from a 4-channel, you know, that wants to learn some of this and try a maneuver that they're deathly afraid of, they can do that.
And I think that was the difference between you and I. You have already flown a lot of this stuff, mm-hmm. and it was like we've talked before about the difference between a Radian and a Radian Pro. If you've never flown the Radian Pro may be okay.
Right.
But if you've flown the Radian, you don't like the Radian Pro because you're kind of in the mindset of it should fly somewhat like the Radian.
Right.
Well, here, I've never flown 3D, so I have no expectations. I have no habits. I just got up there, and it's learn on the fly.
Yeah.
Just go and just do it. Where you've already had, I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that, and it was fighting you.
Right.
But the more I watched you fly it, though, you were catching on to it real quick, especially
right.
that day we were flying.
Yes.
The more you would fly it, the more you say, oh, okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, and then, of course, we'll find out here a little bit
right.
later. He started getting a little too cocky.
I did. Right. So we after we burned about 3 or 4 batteries through it, we got charged some up and went back out. I started to really push the limits with it. And I must say, out of the box, you know, and with the panic button and everything, to go out and try stuff with this plane was really phenomenal. And I was really starting to get really comfortable with it. And I was still trying to work on the Stagility mode, you know, to really, you know, see what it, you know, how it works and everything. Well, I was getting a little cocky and was doing some inverted flat spins and got a little too low to the ground. I'd say probably about 5 feet when I let go of the sticks. And of course, it takes that 1 second for the plane to self-right on mm-hmm. Stagility mode while I was a little too low and bam, into the ground, it went hard. It
exploded.
So I kind of broke the nose off of the front of it. And that was the end of our flying day for that. So we went back home, very easy repair. One thing I like about the Z Foam, and I have a lot of the Z Foam airplanes from E-Flight and Park Zone, is even when it does break, mm-hmm. it may crush just a very little, but it always seems to be a really clean break. And, you know, with our P-51s, Pat, we've crashed those numerous times. Usually within 10 or 15 minutes, a little glue back together, we're flying again. You can't even tell.
Yeah, I don't like snow.
So stuff's great for repair. So anyway, we got it back together and then called up Mike and Pat and got Wayne back out there. So we went back out and did a little bit more testing. Now, Mike, I think you were the next one to fly.
So guinea pig, yeah.
So, you know, start off from the beginning, you know, since, again, you're kind of one of those guys that are just kind of learning, you know, to do inverted well, and you wanted to try knife edge was your big thing you wanted to try, and Harriers. And so what was your initial thoughts of it when you first got it up?
Well, I definitely was throttling too much. I don't know why. I guess I was treating it more like a warbird at first, uh-huh. thinking, well, it's going to tip stall. But obviously, you're like, cut back on the throttle. And I did, and it was still flying great. And I'm like, why was I jamming the throttle up so high? That was a hard habit for me to break. I treated it more like a warbird at first, I guess. And with 3D, you do not... You have a lot more control on them, obviously.
Yeah.
And I did not care. I only played with the Stagility mode for very little. It took over way too quick. I don't know if there's a way to program more delay, but it sounded like in your case it wasn't fast enough. So I don't know. maybe that was just me, but I probably would have liked more delay on it because when I try things, I'm up fairly high. I'm not so low to the ground when I try things 3D or whatever.
Right. And that's the thing we definitely learned about Stagility mode. If you want to go up and you really want to practice the hardcore 3D moves, that is a good setting because you're constantly on the sticks and doing things. And then if you do get into a little bit of a problem, you know, you can just let go and you know, where you were more, you know, trying to do the knife edge and what else were you trying? Inverted stuff like that, where, you know, that's more kind of in the precision stuff. Now, one thing I will say, and we kind of learned is,
don't land in precision.
Yeah. in the manual, they do have a setting for dual rates, and I did program that in the radio. And I will say, you know, unless you're a real accomplished pilot or anything, but if you're kind of new to this, take off and land in precision mode on the low rates.
Low rates.
Yeah,
yes.
It's so much easier. And the plane is really a pussycat in
that's
the low
what it
rates.
Was. I had it in high rates. And high I was rates, coming yeah. down and it came down kind yeah. of quick on me.
You know, and then once you're in the air, flip it up to high rates and, you know, go to town. But that was definitely one thing we learned real quick. So what was your favorite part of the airplane? What did you enjoy about it the most, do you think?
Well, I was trying to do the knife edge. And it was really odd because the first time I did it, it looked awesome. And uh-huh. I couldn't grasp exactly what I was doing. And I've been practicing on the simulator ever since. Uh-huh. Just trying to, that you go opposite rudder with the aileron type thing. And you don't have as much. I was over aileroning it and kind of going upside down quicker uh-huh. than I expected. So
right.
I was struggling with the moves, but that oh crap button, man, I fell in love with that. That I loved more than the Stagility mode. I had my finger right over that
uh-huh.
that button, and it saved me, I bet, at least a handful of times.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the first flight.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, I was pretty low in some cases. You're like, you even said, hit the crap. And I was definitely in trouble. There's no doubt. And I lost orientation on a couple points. And man, that thing saved a plane. And that sold me big time on this plane. I know there's probably some other planes that have it, but that sold me with this plane big time. That's huge.
Right. And how exciting is it for you guys really to be able
like
to,
that.
Yeah, go out and actually try some of that stuff and not be, you know, shaken and nervous.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, I don't want to auger this thing in. Or
it takes almost a simulator out of the equation. You can push the limits more than I ever. I'm not one to push limits at all. And Chad's always trying to, you know, do this. Do
yeah.
that. I'm like, man, I can't. I just don't, but with this plane, I actually had that freedom to do that, and I absolutely enjoyed that.
Right. And that's one thing I was having trouble too doing the knife edge with it, and couldn't figure out why. And I think, again, it's just been so long since I've been really doing any 3D to where, you know, if you're out with the T-28 Trojan, you know, trying to do a knife edge, and it's got so much coupling where you're fighting the ailerons and the rudder and then the throttle to keep the thing in a knife edge, where literally this plane being a precision aerobatic, once you roll that thing up on its side, you don't even have to touch the ailerons. You just feed in a little bit of rudder, you know, and
throttle.
Yeah, and just a little throttle. I mean, literally, that thing will just stick right there and hold that position the whole time.
And you found that it sticks in position possibly because of those vortex generators on both sides. You probably did. Did you do? I didn't see you do any hovering, but
we did a little bit. Yeah,
does it hover real well?
Yeah,
I tried it. I have no clue how to hover.
Yeah,
so
I did. Harrier and hover was amazing, and that was the other thing. It seemed like when you did to go into like a hover, it was crazy how the plane seemed to almost find that position into a hover, and it would just really try to hold it. That and here was a first for me. I was actually doing aileron rolls in the hover, you know, pretty consistently, and that's something that was
awesome.
A first for me that I you know, always struggled with doing something like that.
That's
so
awesome.
How about you, Pat? You were first let's just say again, Pat amazes me with his pilot skills because his first flight, he was up there, I mean, doing some awesome rolls, inverted flight, low to the ground. I mean, he took to this plane like I couldn't believe, and doing stuff that you probably haven't done for quite a while, take it.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I mean, I think, you know, it's always nice to fly something new boy, I just, you know, that's probably the most responsive airplane I've flown.
Yeah.
I haven't flown a lot of those types of airplanes.
Right.
But yeah, you know, what you wanted it to do, it would do.
Yeah.
And in that precision mode.
Right.
It, you know, if you throw the stick over, I mean, it would just roll. And it wouldn't deviate, you know, it would stay its course. And I thought it, you know, it was a lot easier to do some of the things on that airplane than some of the things on some of my other airplanes, just because of, you know, that's what it's designed
right,
for.
Right.
But I thought it was real responsive. I mean, it's like Wayne said, you wanted to do something and it would do it.
Yeah.
You know, we were doing rolls. We would do outside loops.
Yeah.
And it was just real responsive.
And at slower speeds than I've ever done as well. Because I was, like I said, I thought I had to throttle for every maneuver, and don't have to.
No, you really don't have to.
Yeah. This agility mode, I mean, I didn't play with it that much, but I liked it. I could see where it could introduce some challenges.
Right, right.
But, you know, especially when you're in that mode and you start going a little faster than what it's designed for, it starts to get a little wobbly.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that real quick. And you know, it's something it's known, and they do address it because it's how they have it set up. Now, if you are in the 3D mode or in, I would take it, stagility mode, if you do try to fly it fast or do high-speed precision maneuver, you will get the, what do I want to say, Wayne? It jitters. Mm-hmm. You'll get the jitters in it. And that is because the gains, when you flip to those modes, the gains are set really high to try to hold that plane in position when you're doing 3D. So that's a known thing. So I did get a couple emails on that. Hey, you know, my servos are all jittery, you know, when I'm flying, there's something wrong. No. That's how it's set up. If you want to do fast aerobatic maneuvers or fly fast, all you got to do is flip it into precision mode, and that will all go away, and you won't have any problems. But even though we did get it to jitter, you know, it wasn't overly bad. It's not like the thing was just going to start, you know, vibrating and auger itself in the ground. You did see it a little bit, but right. It really wasn't that bad. As soon as we seen it and realized what was happening right away, you know, we just flipped it over. But again, you know, if you're doing 3D stuff and you, I don't know, do like a high speed dive and it jitters a little bit, the plane's not going to crash. You know, if you just pull out of it normal and go back to doing 3D, it's not really even a problem that I've seen.
And if you really get into it and you still find that as a problem, that's where the programmer's nice, because you can go in that
absolutely
and dial down the gains,
sure,
to tame it down a little
sure
bit.
Sure. So. Yeah. And you know, that's something for the probably the hardcore guys. You know, they can go in there and change things all around that, you know, fits their skill or how they want to fly. I think set up out of the box though for what the plane is designed, I think it is a pretty good setup though, in my opinion.
Well, it's got me going, because I would have never considered 3D because I'm no way near good enough a pilot to do
right
that. But now this thing is a great opening door to that, because
uh-huh
that was a blast.
Yeah.
And now I have that. I want to check this thing out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is a great, you get it, start out with it.
Yeah.
And then work your way, because there's no way you're going to just go out and buy a 3D plane and fly it without augering that thing.
Yes.
You know, when you're trying to do this stuff.
Right.
And this thing just helps you with learning the basics, learning your timing. Oh, this is how you do the sticks.
Right.
And then just take off from
right
there.
And that's what I liked about it, because, again, I said I had the older Park Zone Extra that mm-hmm they had out, and I bought it because I wanted to get into 3Ds. Now, I've flown a lot of the EPP flat foamies. Now, them things are great because they're way slower, and you learn a lot of the maneuvers that way without, you know, spending a lot of money. But the thing I notice is when you try to transfer a lot of that over to these, you know, precision aerobatic planes, yeah, the inputs are kind of the same, but the planes don't fly the same. You're a lot faster and, you know, a lot yeah different. So, you know, with the Extra, it got to the point where, again, you know, I was afraid to try a lot of these maneuvers that I wanted to do with that plane because I didn't want to auger it in the ground. Well, guess what? The thing, you know, I got to a point where I was comfortable doing certain things, and then the plane kind of sat on the shelf for a year, and I ended up selling it and, you know, moved on to other things. But now with this plane and the features it has, like you guys said, now I'm excited.
Right.
You know, hey, I want to try this maneuver. And, you know, you can practice it over and over, and you don't have to worry about it.
And now, that's an area I really want to go is 3D. I really do want to learn more about it, even more so than the quads, I think. I mm-hmm don't know. It's piqued my interest to do some of that maneuverability in the air like that.
Yeah. So.
Now, word of caution, guys, for those who have never done this and you're thinking about doing this, even though it has the S3X, please go up two or three mistakes
yeah
high.
Yes.
You know, still leave yourself some
absolutely
wiggle room, because
yeah
you get too low to the ground, you can still auger this thing.
Right.
It's not 100%
right
foolproof, but man, is it making things easy.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It saved me, that, like I said, five times.
Yeah.
Easy.
And I found,
and
I totally agree with you guys. We talked about, you know, staying up high, because that was one of my mistakes is, you know, again, I was so used to flying the EPP, you know, flat foamies. I was probably maybe 10 to 20 feet off the ground when I first started flying, trying to do the maneuvers. For one, I was a little bit too slow trying to fly it, and I didn't really want to do what I wanted it to do. And I'll be honest, out of the four or five batteries I put through it that first day, I crashed it four times, or if not five. And I will have to say the thing is tough. Those crashes that I had didn't do a thing to it. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, I have to give it up. I don't know what that stock prop is made out of, but yeah. after me crashing it four yeah. or five times, plus I augered yeah, it augered into it the ground, hard into the ground. Mike had a couple hard landings. Pat augered it into the ground. That prop never broke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not one time.
Yeah.
So that's a
wow.
a true.
I didn't even after your wreck, I thought, oh wow, I thought that was a new problem.
No,
that's
no.
one of those times where I kicked myself for not holding down the shutter on my camera long enough, because I was catching him in when he's doing these flat spins as he's coming down, and I just released the shutter and stopped shooting, and that's when it ain't. Augered it, and I thought, oh man, that would have been an awesome action
yeah.
shot.
That showed its durability too. Oh, wow,
yeah, that thing is awesome.
And then. Yeah, I lost my train of thought.
Well, it is nice, and I thought that panic recovery mode was really, really a nice feature.
Right.
Oh, man, I mean, that is awesome.
You know, just up there playing Robert. Around, of course, I'd put the airplane in unusual attitudes and hit the button, and yeah. it would right itself, and it was pretty impressive at the...
How quickly it
did that. But there was probably one or two times when I used that out of... fear of hitting the ground.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. we all have.
Yeah. So had that feature not been available, you know, probably would have been a shorter day.
Right.
Oh, I would have been doing a ton of repairs before.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I'm glad on my DX8. I switched the trainer button and my gear switch mm-hmm. around. So now the oh crap button is on the outside. So it's so much easier to hit that thing instead of trying to go to the inside.
You know, and with the way technology has advanced over the past couple of years, and I don't know if they have this feature available or they're working on it or what, but wouldn't it be nice to have a button that would not only, you know, right your airplane and have it fly straight and level like this protection that's built
oh,
in.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
But wouldn't it be nice if the airplane knew where you were at?
Yeah.
Whether, you know, GPS or signal strength or something, and yeah. you hit a button and it would turn around and fly towards
yeah.
the transmitter.
Yeah.
At a level, you know, yeah. so, you know, it'd come back into sure. view and you could grab it again.
Right.
I mean, I think that would be
I think that's very possible too, especially with the, you know, the GPS systems on the new quads. Most yeah. all the high-tech ones now have the return to home feature on them,
yeah.
you know, so they'll come right back within usually about a 10-foot circle. So down the road, yeah, I think that's, you know what, that might be something to bring up to the big boys here at Flight Test, you know, Josh and Alex and them, and say, hey, you know, you got this technology on the quads. Why not try to put it in airplanes?
Yeah, it may be out there. Maybe someone's working on it.
Sure. But,
kind of a fail-safe. So, you know,
yeah.
How many times have we heard people get out of range and they lose orientation and they can't tell, is it coming to me or going away?
You right.
know, hit the button.
Right.
And
there's, for me... I've got much greater satisfaction losing an airplane to a spectacular crash than to watch it just fly away.
Yeah.
And never see it again.
Yeah.
If I'm going to lose it,
oh, man, did you see that?
Yeah.
Right. No one likes to tell a story of you. There it went.
Yeah.
Couldn't find it. But, I think the airplane looks great. I think it looks nice. I think, like Wayne said, you know, I don't have any experience flying that kind of airplane either. But I think with that technology... it would be a great, great tool, a great, great plane to learn
right.
some of these things on.
Yeah.
So,
hey,
push your limits. And also, it seemed like it had enough power. The 2200 battery, it took off the ground. I know you said you put a little larger wheels on it, but.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that. Yes,
it took off great, I thought.
Yeah. Now, where we fly, the grass is pretty high. It's not like a shortcut grass field or anything. But what I did is I put like maybe a half inch bigger wheel on it. Then we had no problems because we had a couple mm-hmm. nose overs,
yeah.
you know, landing and taking off was a little bit rough sometimes. But after I put them a little bit bigger wheels on, it took that high grass really well. And I don't see any reason if you wanted to, as long as you kept them light, you could even go bigger.
Yeah.
You know, Pat, I was thinking too, actually, they do have the return to home systems on the FPV planes.
I saw an episode.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they do have. It's the same setup basically, you know, on the quads and stuff. But,
it
you
has
know,
the
they,
on-screen display.
Yeah,
there's another feature that does bring it back.
You have to be FPV?
I don't know if you actually would have to be FPV. I think like maybe the vector systems and stuff.
I think if it has a GPS system, that's right. All it needs.
Right. Yeah. You
I did see that somewhere in a recent episode.
Right. You hit the button, that plane's going to come back. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that that's been out for last couple of years. I think.
I think that would actually be the best thing too for the gliders, especially if you get out of range.
You know, that's a good idea.
Because I can't see it. Where's it at?
Yeah.
Now hit it.
Yeah.
Bring it right back to you.
If the technology gets small enough, the ultra rate micro could use that. We've heard a numerous story about them going off into oblivion.
And the cool thing is, Pat, you can actually set, I believe you can set in the program features your altitude too. So like if you were in a thermal plane and you were up at 1,200 feet and it went out of sight or whatever and you hit the return to home, it'll bring it down to say 50 feet and then head back, head back. So that's definitely out there. There's one other thing I got off topic now, what I was going to talk about, the wheels.
We can bring our notepad.
I know I wanted to talk to you guys about. Now, what do you guys think? I got a couple of questions kind of on this same subject. What would you or who would you refer this plane to? Now, obviously, they're kind of saying that if you got some kind of four-channel experience that, you could possibly. But what person or what level would you say, this would be a plane for you, or I would suggest this plane, or what do you guys think?
Definitely somebody is comfortable with four channel flight. Uh-huh. Not somebody who's just kind of, okay, I've been doing this for a week. I mean, it helps, but man, you got to be comfortable with your radio.
Well, even your buddy that was out there, he'd flown 2 weeks. He wasn't over eager to ask, or you like to let him fly.
No.
So, I mean, there's definitely, you have to have some knowledge, intermediate level, I would say, in all honesty.
Yeah, I don't think this is a starter.
No, definitely not a starter. Yeah, they're not claiming it, as a starter.
Right.
Yeah. I agree with you guys. If you're real comfortable with a four channel, maybe doing a little bit of inverted or loops and rolls and stuff like that, then I think it would be a great next step up.
Well, yeah, and I think the targeted audience would be me, someone who hasn't done that before, who is not ready to go out and spend a bunch of money on something. Right. I know there's a high probability I'm going to
Burn
into the ground.
Yeah,
it kind of bridges that gap.
Yeah.
From flying some of the warbirds to, maybe working my way up to something high performance, a full, 3D
It really
airplane.
Entices me because I don't enjoy repairs. Yeah. It's the same medium repairs
Mike,
that
you
day. Would... So I like actually flying and not repairing, like Chad. So it definitely appealed to me tenfold.
So you need to get the flight test guys here to build an airplane and just wrap it all into bubble wrap.
See, I'm like Pat. I'm at that same level. I've only flown inverted in simulator.
Right.
And I just can't bring myself to do it out on the field. But now with this plane, bring it. I don't have a problem trying it.
Yeah, and I was really excited watching Wayne because I'm telling you, he did not want to fly this. He's like, do not want to fly this plane. I'm like, you're flying this plane, and we're going to put a battery in it.
Yeah, Chris, who can fly circles around me, he's crashing this thing left and right. And I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me.
That's how he told me. He's like, I don't like this plane. I'm like, and you want me to fly this thing? He's telling me
crazy?
On the phone. It's like, you might not like this, Mike. I'm like, oh, boy, I'm going to sweat bullets on the phone just talking with him. Like, I don't even know if I want to go out there this
good,
next time.
Good thing you don't listen to me, right?
That's where Chris is related to David, because of David. Oh, no, it's okay. Just go on. Yeah. Just do it.
Because
I'm the same way.
I've been known just to take an airplane and chuck and go, here you go. I'm like,
oh, my gosh. I have heart attack. I know my heart skipped a beat or two with you launch. I don't even enjoy having you hand launch me because I just never know what's going to happen. Like the radian, you just... With no power, and you're like, well, I'm testing the glide, I have to see if it's gliding. I'm like stretched, and I don't even have the remote on. You're just checking it. And I'm like, what the heck? But it's awesome. You know what you're doing. It just, it scares me. Be thrown into the fire like that.
Right. Now, my other question was, Andre Russo sent me an email, and his big question was if this was going to be now again, Andre's a pretty good pilot, can fly the four channel and invert and do everything. He says if I wanted to get into 3D and this was going to be my one big first purchase, you know, spending that kind of money, you know, is it worth it or should I spend the money for this thing?
That kind of money, this thing has, it's an awesome price. And now they even dropped the price again.
Yes, right. You showed like, that really, to me. Yeah. I have a feeling I'm going to be clicking on that really soon. Yeah. A
couple $100, I say go. Yeah. That's easy. That's an easy spend there.
Everybody agrees on that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's bind and fly. So it's like, yeah, really.
Right.
Charge up the battery and let's go play.
Right.
Wow.
Now, Pat, real quick, though, I wanted to ask you because it's not
Pat sweating. You're like, I mean, man.
I know you weren't ditching us, but you had to pick up an airplane part. You had to pick up an airplane part that Sunday, but it was just funny because you had a little mishap and you augured into the ground. You're like, okay, boys, I gotta go. I'll see you later. And you were gone.
But I know I felt bad about that. I felt bad about that.
And you could tell too. Yeah.
And you know, you texted me later saying, yeah, we got it. And I met up with you
where you were working, and you're like, did you guys get it up flying? I'm like, I didn't even want to answer the question. I know how bad you felt. I'm like, well, no, the glue has to dry overnight. Yeah.
Well, and you know, really my mind was on a lot of other things. I mean, I had this you know, where I work,
yeah,
we've got corporate airplanes, and the airplane came back the night before with a
We got to tell everybody too. Right before you crashed, your phone was ringing.
Yeah. So we had to get a part brought in, and one of my favorite things to do is work on an airplane lavatory.
And what's really funny is I'm outside the plane. I'm like, you guys have something you want to hand down? And he's like, I don't think you want to hand out this part.
There's nothing in an airplane lavatory you want to hand out.
Yeah. And well, if someone's going to do this job, it's going to be me. And I don't want to call one of the other guys in to do it. So I went in there, and when that phone call I got, it was a, you know, we had a part courier, so
yeah,
it was a courier service delivering this valve. But yeah, I had at the end of the day, both of my arms up to the elbows were blue.
Jeez,
I looked like a Smurf. So.
But really, what I wanted to ask you though, I was just wanted to get your opinion on what you think happened or what, you know, what caused the crash.
Well, I think, you know, obviously it was a little too low, but I knew I had to go, and phone was ringing, and that didn't distract me or throw me off. But what had happened was I was trying to set up for a landing.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was bringing it in, if I recall, I had already had one landing, which worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Landing.
Well, let me just go ahead. I'm going to have to go. Let me bring this in and set it down. And the landing got a little too long, and it wasn't a very good landing from the setup. You know, it wasn't stabilized, so the airplane was kind of coming towards me at an angle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one of those things, as it passed in front of me, and I've got to move my body from left to right.
Uh-huh.
And you're only a couple, you know, 18 inches off the ground. I think it just, you know, it was a landing, it was a crash that was very close to the ground and kind of slow, and the airplane just flipped over, but it had snapped the nose off where it was, had been repaired before. So.
Right. And I will have to say, you know, when you do land this plane, you drop it down in the low rates and everything, surprisingly, you know, we had no wind that morning, which helped, but that thing really would glide way farther. You know, when you cut that power and bring that thing in, I was actually surprised at how far that thing actually would glide coming in. You know, I thought for sure you kind of dropped the throttle and the thing was just going to come down out of the sky and plop down on the ground. No, but it didn't.
When I was in high rates, it came down real quick.
Yeah.
More than I expected. Well,
definitely a little bit different than what's the plane you brought out last time that we flew when we were landing on the Ball Diamond?
Oh, the Cub.
Oh, yeah, the Cub. Yeah.
I mean, that had a nice high angle, you know,
right,
lie down at sea.
Yeah. Yeah.
Weren't you the one that just brought it right over the fence and you just drop that thing down?
Yeah, again, I don't know how he does it, folks, but he blows my mind every time he's out. He won't fly for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, grab the airplane and just shows us all up. I can't figure it out.
I don't think so.
But
it's all good.
Yeah.
Your 3D abilities were better than I ever saw you fly. I thought.
Yeah,
like doing some. I know. Is it called like a blender or something?
We were doing all. Yeah,
we were doing inverted flat spin.
Yeah, you're really
like. I'm like,
that.
Wow!
Yeah.
I didn't know you had those abilities. It's pretty cool to watch.
They're pretty rusty.
That was pretty cool.
They're pretty rusty. That's for sure.
I enjoyed that.
But I think now getting that plane out and going back to it, it's definitely a lot of fun. So might have to actually purchase one of these myself.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I'd love to go out and fly it again.
Yeah, yeah, we got it fixed for you. It's all ready to go. All right, so I think you guys pretty much caught everything and our thoughts of it. We'll kind of go around and just touch on it real quick. But before we do that, I want to just give you the actual specs a little bit in case if you guys haven't seen it. But obviously, all you got to do is go to Horizon Hobbies website. It does have the 10-size brushless motor. It's 42 inches in length, 12x4 prop. And here's the cool thing, what I liked, is the plane only flies off of a 2200 battery, which is the most common battery there is. And we were getting, we pushed the limits a couple times a little bit. I think we got actually 8 minutes out, but I was setting the timer for about 6, and we were landing still with like 20% battery. And that was flying pretty hardcore. Mike was hard on the throttle. And
Well, it wasn't power. I mean, like you could, I had it way too powered too much, but
yeah,
it was impressive the power it did have.
Right.
Yeah, because that's, and I think that's what it is when you don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
You're going to have to use a lot of power. Then you find out, no,
yeah,
it's the exact opposite. Okay. This thing has such good throws. It's balanced really nice. You don't have to power this thing.
No.
And it's just, it'll just go.
Right.
Now, did this plane have a power switch? Because I plugged the battery and waiting for the flaps to bind. Yes,
did
that come in with this?
Yeah.
That's a feature I'm not used to.
Right.
Electric,
right.
So
that is awesome. Something it does have. It has a switch on, which a lot of these AS3X planes with a safe technology have a switch on them. So you turn your radio on, plug the battery in, and then turn the switch on, and then it'll go through its setup, and you'll see the ailerons and the elevator all move, and it's getting the its throws on it, so it knows
that
what
was
to
new
do.
To me. And it also is nice because it probably has to be level when you do that, so hitting that switch as opposed to trying to plug a battery
on
its level helps a lot.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
The two features I picked up on real quick is one, the canopy latch.
Yes.
I thought that was...
No more losing canopies, Pat, inverted, with your battery falling out.
Not only the canopy, but the magnets come with it.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty neat, and the on-off switch.
Yeah.
It sounds like your canopy needs to be entirely magnetic.
Yeah,
my canopy needs glue.
Epoxy.
Yeah, but back to flipping that switch, you do have to have it setting down, setting level when you flip it. Because I have a friend that took the apprentice and totally buried this thing on his maiden flight and destroyed it. And here he was holding it sideways when it initialized, so it doesn't know which way up or which way down. So
that's a good
point. He destroyed
it.
So you do with any of these, you have to set them down, let it, and then flip the switch. Don't touch it till it's done initializing. Then go.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'll tell you, it was pretty amazing. I think we noticed when we were going through the settings and everything and talking about them, and the plane was initialized, sitting on the ground, with the tail sitting down, and it wasn't perfectly level. Like, we would hit the oh crap switch, though, you could see the tail actually trying to level it out right there on the ground. So, I mean, it's pretty precise. And, on panic mode or even on stagility mode, I'm telling you, you guys can attest to this. When you let go of them sticks or hit that button, that plane is so fast.
Yeah,
whether you're doing rolls or you're inverted, that thing will flip around and just straight as an arrow so quick. It really was amazing. The other thing I was going to talk a little bit about, too, having the 12x4 prop, you got a big 12-inch prop. That thing's got all kinds of torque. As far as I could see with the batteries, we were running 2200 65C batteries, unlimited vertical. I mean, I could literally take that thing right out of sight. But what was nice about it only being a 12x4 was it wasn't super fast. It had all kinds of torque and would do anything you asked, but it wasn't going to, get out of sight too quick. It's not a super fast airplane.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not real familiar with this, but the 3Ds aren't really made to go fast.
Correct.
They're made to do stunts.
They're correct.
Exactly. So
right.
It's not a speed thing, because it's more about precision
correct.
And being able to do
absolutely.
Stunts.
Absolutely. But, like, Mike's case, you know, when he first sees this plane, he's flying this plane again. He thinks he's got to, fly fast and fly at 3/4 throttle the whole, until he realized you could back it down to half. Some of the movers, you could even back it down more, and the plane would do anything you asked it.
Yeah, I was definitely
throttle.
Astonished with that aspect of the plane. When I went down to half,
right.
And I still had the control level, even in turns and stuff. I was like, wow,
right.
That's pretty cool.
So back to the specs real quick, if you kind of want to know the size, the length, it's a 40, it's a good park flyer, 42 inches in length, 12x4 prop, 2200 battery, 40 amp ESC. The wingspan's, 44 inches for the wingspan. So it's in the typical park zone, size airplane. So nothing has changed on that. So I think that's a pretty good review. We all agree. Maybe we'll run through a 1 through 10 list as far as what do you guys think on looks and appearance, fit and finish and everything. What would you guys give it?
I'd give it a 9.
Nine?
Yeah.
Green's not my favorite color, so yeah. I'd probably say 7.
An 8.
Yeah, 8. I agree with that. I would say, after the abuse we put it through, especially myself with the rough landings and everything, I'm going to give it a 9 on the durability, the fit and finish.
Oh, yeah.
It looks amazing.
On my level.
See, I like Kawasaki dirt bikes.
There you go.
It looks like Kawasaki, so
yeah.
I like the color. So.
Flight characteristics, again, I would say it's right up there with, I would say, a 9, mm-hmm. With the as precise as it was, it has.
To me, it was close to like a wing, and wings are real responsive. You point and go.
Right.
So that it was nice in that aspect.
Right, right. You guys all agree on that, probably an 8, yeah. 9.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say 9.
And one thing I have to mention again, and we talked to Matt about this, those guys are really listening to people out there and seeing what's on the market. They are dropping their prices. Mm-hmm. And this plane was running, when it first came out, $230, and now they're running a $25 special off, I think, till the 1st of September.
I think that's over. I think it's now just flat out $200. I think they got rid of the $25 off, and they just dropped the price, period.
You sure?
I think that's what it said. On
check
website.
On that while we're looking.
You're probably the more honest rating guy, though, because like I said, I never really compared or flown other 3D stuff, so it's going to be hard for me to rate it.
Yes, it's been $25 has already been removed for the price, so it's just straight out.
So the plane originally was $229,
it's $205
and it's $205 now. So $200 for what you're getting, you're not going to find anything like that. So I really have to applaud them on bringing their prices down.
Yeah,
all right,
that's awesome.
Well, that was that's our review of the Park Sun Sukhoi. We just got just a little bit of time left, Pat. You all right on time? I don't want to hold you up too much. We'll buzz through this real quick. But I did finally get the HK goggles. Goggle kit, and we got that put together and set up and everything. So we went out one afternoon, Wayne and Mike and I, and flew them, off my quadcopter. Now, what we did with this kind of little review is I brought a pair of the Flight Test Fat Shark goggles with us, plus Mike, you had yours. So we all kind of just passed around the goggles, and got in our opinion on it. So now, again, these goggles are only $30.
Oh, yeah.
And you glue them together.
Story. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, there's pros and cons and everything, but what was your, because you have fat sharks, Mike. I didn't have anything, and Wayne, you didn't have it. But what was your, first initial, opinion or reaction to them when you seen them? They look kind of hokey, don't they?
Yes, so I'm going to be honest. They do look hokey. I don't know if it's the foam or what, but I'll be honest. They look hokey, but when I put them on, I love the feeling. I mean, I love the visual aspect of it being one screen like that. I'm not big on the split screen feel.
Yeah.
And it was better than I thought it would be.
Was
in
it?
Honesty. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just it's a different perspective.
Right.
FPV for me, but
what do you think, Wayne?
I thought it was awesome. And
for
also
$30
that,
too. I mean, you got to keep that in mind.
You can't
too.
Argue with $30.
Exactly.
But you also had the parameters and stuff. You can get in there and change some stuff.
Yes.
So it's not like
the brightness
what you see is what you get.
Right.
No, it has some stuff where you can change.
Yeah, things. It actually has, the brightness and the contrast. And then what they also include, too, is they give you, I think, 3 different types of magnifying lenses that you mount in there. So before you, obviously, you have to put it together and glue it together. But before you mount that, you kind of slide those in there and see what's best for you or what kind of view you're looking for. for. And again, they're adjustable inside the goggle too. So you got a lot of options there, you know, what you want to do. Now, some of the downsides I did find was one, there's nothing built in. So you got wires hanging off of you, battery wires, the transmitter wires, you know, hooked up. So, you know, it's not like you can just walk around like a pair of fat sharks. That's one downfall. Two, I think the quality, like now you're getting into some of the HD stuff, and if you're running off of a GoPro, obviously the image is going to be a little bit better on a pair of fat sharks, you know, for what you're getting. But again, $30 versus, you know, $300 or $400.
You get up in the air, get you the experience. Yeah. That's for sure.
The other thing I kind of noticed, and again, it's up to the individual. It didn't fit my face real good. I think if you got some foam at like one of the craft stores,
cover up,
and covered the gaps up a little bit, maybe worked on the system that goes, you know, around your head a little bit to make them fit a little bit better. I think, you know, that would make them a lot better. But as far as the actual just quality and looking through the screen, I kind of agree with you, Mike. It almost feels like you're sitting in a movie theater, kind of. Yes. You know, you got that movie theater perception looking down into the goggle, and I really enjoyed that, actually.
I did too.
And sometimes, depending on what I was doing, I think I almost preferred that view better than the fat shark view.
I did as well.
But other than that, for $30, I really don't think you can beat them. Or here was the other thing. Say you got a pair of fat sharks or what, or one or two pair or whatever, and people are always asking you what's it look like, or you want to take them for a ride or whatever. For $30,
you could throw them on something,
you know, to share the experience. You buy two pair for that price. You know. So that's our little review on the HK goggles, I think. Good deal. What do you got? Good deal. All right, guys. We've been rattling on here quite a while, I think. I don't know exactly how long we're here, but Pat's got to get out of here. You got what? Baseball game, softball game, something going on today.
Soccer game. Third grade soccer game.
It's highly important.
That's
you
better
know.
Than laboratory work.
Yeah.
Yeah. No blue hands.
So I think we're going to get out of here. It is Saturday morning. Maybe the day looks pretty good. Maybe we'll try to get out and get some flying in or something. I got my antennas for my quad, so I got to get those on and try to get my quad back going again and get out.
Let me know
there.
If you go out. I'll bring the Trojan out.
Okay. Actually, show us right
a couple things in the car just in case.
You are always prepared. Oh, yeah. Always prepared.
There's everything into that Mustang.
Yeah, I was going to go check out a campground, but if that's the case, I may just wait and check it out tomorrow.
I think pretty soon you're going to see Mike with a cargo carrier on top of a Mustang.
Any chance you could bring that Sequoia out again?
Oh, we might do that
too. Put a hitch on a hitch.
Yeah,
I think too.
Mike's pulling in a brand new Mustang and a trailer.
It looks like something.
I'm ready to go, guys.
Mad Max or something
with
the gear on it.
Oh my gosh, guys are hilarious. All right, we're gonna get out of here. We'll see you here in probably a couple weeks, and it was fun. We'll see you soon. All right, guys.
See you.
See ya.